Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing.
And Bubba Wallace.
You know what's the worst part of a race? A rain delay.
Sitting around, waiting for the track to dry, is dull.
But instead of waiting, we hang out with Chumba Casino.
Social casino slots, bingo, solitaire, plenty of fun to keep us entertained.
So why let a rain delay slow you down? Play now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Summer break is here. I want my kids to have fun, but I also want them to keep their skills sharp. Between vacations and sports, I need something that fits our busy schedule without adding stress. That's why we use IXL. IXL is an award-winning online platform that helps kids truly understand what they're learning. Whether they're building math confidence, strengthening reading and writing skills, or reviewing science concepts, from pre-K through 12th grade, IXL offers personalized interactive learning that adapts to each child's level and pace. It's proven to improve grades, and one subscription covers every child in the home, saving us time and money. It's trusted nationwide. And in fact, IXL is used in 96 of the top 100 school districts in the U.S. Make an impact on your child's learning. Get IXL now, and listeners can get an exclusive 20% off IXL membership when they sign up today at IXLlearning.com/audio. Visit IXLlearning.com/audio to get the most effective learning program out there at the best price.
The GLP-1 pill you've been waiting for is now on Row. Yep, it's finally here. With the same clinically proven ingredient, now in a pill, and now on Row. It's the first FDA-approved GLP-1 pill for weight loss. At the lowest price available, that's one daily GLP-1 pill for big results. Now on Row. Go to ro.co/listen to see if you qualify. Rx only. Go to ro.co/safety for serious side effects and boxed warning associated with GLP-1s.
It's never the underdog.
Yes, sir.
It's never the underdog.
Yes, sir.
Final four night.
What's up, Duke fans? Welcome to the Devil's Den podcast. I'm your host, Josh Smith, joined by my co-hosts, Raul and Shu. We're recording this, so this is the USA. It's playing Belgium right now in the World Cup. It's currently halftime. So we're going to get in here a little bit in the spirit of all of that. We are going to talk a little FIBA World Cup. We're going to get on some JBB talk, going to hit on some Summer League. So our last podcast, Raul and I kind of went through and dissected a little bit some of the moves from the NBA draft. If you haven't listened to that yet, we'll talk briefly about the Summer League performances. Really, Malik and Cam. Slim, I don't think, is yet slated on here. Okay, it says that he's going to play with the Wolves tomorrow, so maybe you'll have seen a little bit of that before we will. And then we'll finish, fellas, by kind of touching on some recruiting news. One commitment since we've chatted, and then we've got a few offers on the board now to kind of get into. Fellas, we'll just jump right in here. We'll start with JBB. So under 17 FIBA World Cup, you've probably seen some of the highlights on Twitter. Disclaimer on the top, we did not go and watch all the game footage on this, so we're not going to break it down at that level yet, y'all, but the hype continues to build. He comes away with the gold medal, gets the MVP, putting up some pretty big time numbers. I saw a graphic where it was comparing to what kind of Cam Boozer did at that stage too. Fellas, like, this is starting to kind of like walks like a duck, talks like a duck, where there's smoke, there's fire, whatever metaphor you want to use here. The noise is starting to be pretty noticeable. Has that shifted how you view this situation, how you view him in the context of next season? Or are you still kind of in wait and see mode? How much stock are you putting into this summer work?
Yeah, I don't want to jump the gun just yet. You know, we've seen kind of stuff like this before that I'm sure we'll get into here in a minute. But, I mean, look, crazy numbers. It definitely shifts a little bit of the expectation of, you know, what I thought he might give us, the kind of minutes. But I think he's ready to give us more than what, you know, I was really giving him credit for right off the bat. Just some of the numbers that, you know, jump out. 31 points in a game with, I think it was, I forgot the minutes he played there, but it was low, right?
24, 6 of 8 from three. Yeah.
6 of 8 from three. So you got a, you know, a guy with this size that can put the ball on the floor, makes good passes, but can also shoot, not just like standstill shoot. Like, he's coming around off screens, and, you know, movement shooting for a 6'11 lefty that I love. So my expectations for him have shifted a little bit. I'm not going to let it get too far into, you know, whether or not he's cracking the starting lineup just yet, because, you know, I think it is going to be an interesting battle between him and Cam Williams to really see who gets that. But what are your thoughts on Arole?
Yeah, I think it's a little bit tough to gauge. Just to put it in context, he is playing against 16 and 17 year olds and not very good ones at that. If you look at the average score the U.S. won by, I think it was 46 points. They had a couple 65-point wins. The Serbia game in the final was a little bit closer, but they still end up pulling away and winning by like 25. So they were never really challenged. They just had a super loaded team. So it really made everyone look great. But even among that, he stood out. Obviously, he wins the, you know, finals MVP. But if you gave a tournament MVP, he would have won that too. I'm really encouraged by his all-around production. Like, obviously, we already knew about the shooting, and shooting 54% from three or whatever it is ridiculous. And 88% from the line kind of indicates that that shooting is real, right? But then there's like the rebounding looked excellent. He was blocking about two shots a game, had almost two steals a game as well. So, because those were the bigger question marks for me, not like whether he could shoot off movement, shoot off the dribble, all that. We had already seen that in some of the highlights. I'm more kind of like trying to get a read on what his defensive level is going to be like coming in. You know, it always takes a while, especially for big men, to learn like rotations and stuff like that. So especially if they haven't gone against high level competition, the U.S. was just kind of able to overwhelm teams physically, as we see at some of these lower levels often.
Yeah. Yeah, I think I'm right there with y'all. I think for me, it went in when he committed to being like, oh, he gets to come in, learn college ball, fill things out a little bit, like, you know, kind of be down on the depth chart. Now it's like, oh, this is going to be like a real battle here. Because the way he moves offensively, that's what like it's not so much just like some of the raw stats. It's just the movement. Yep. Like if you're willing to move like that and like off ball and relocate and navigate screens, it's like that should track. Like that should translate in. Which is kind of odd because Cam moves that way on the defensive side, though. Like, yep. Cam's defensive work, like, it's going to be, like, it's going to keep him right in the conversation. JBB moves like that offensively. We haven't quite seen the flip of that, like, who is really going to be able to pair both of these worlds. But you just got a hell of a front court rotation at this point is what it's looking like. I mean, you got some big time competition there at that four spot. You got, you know, two juniors kind of anchoring it up behind them and Charnowski and obviously Big Pat. And so it's a good problem to have. And I think, you know, it would be really, really cool to fly on the wall in these practices because like once he gets there, like this is going to be some big time competition in practice, fellas.
I think one of the things I'm excited about is both of JBB and Cam Williams are good passers. And so I'm excited to see kind of how that gets paired with Big Pat and even Drew, you know, some of the Duke Blue Planet footage that we've seen. Like, I like what I've seen out of Drew so far too.
Yeah. And you can see they're working on him too with a lot of those, like, hey, set a screen, come catch here. You got back line. Like, he's giving, they're working on those little dump balls. They're working. And that's where Damesar eats, right? Yeah. Like, yep. Stuff like that is where he's going to feast. Yeah, man, it's going to be some big time stuff.
Yeah. I think I mentioned on a previous pod that Charnowski's assist rate was higher than anyone on last year's team besides the Boozers. So, you know, we know John not only loves to recruit a passing big man, but he will employ them and make it a big part of the offense. So I think that's awesome because when Pat goes off the floor, if you can run exactly the same stuff with Charnowski, then you have that kind of continuity.
Yeah.
And then if Cam and JBB also have some of those passing chops, then you just have this amazing passing front court, which is what we had last year and was part of why our offense was able to thrive.
Yeah.
I wanted to ask you guys, before I forget, do you think we see those two on the floor together at all, Cam and JBB, like in specific matchups where you might need a little more mobility, versatility, or just Pat gets in foul trouble or somebody gets injured or God forbid, but.
I would assume so just in, cause I think JBB can play the five, you know, if we needed to. I could see it being more of a necessity because Pat's in foul trouble, and I don't know what Drew's foul rate, you know, looks like, but yep. You know, Pat Pat has been foul prone. So I could see that there was a scenario that those two were on the floor together, especially maybe one of these early games. It's not, you know, not one of our marquee games.
I'm going to go even further, man. I think there's a scenario where three of them could be on the floor. Like, yeah. I think you could see a lineup out there where you have JBB, Cam, and Pat, JBB, Cam, and Drew, and then you're just running Caleb Foster and Blackwell. Like, you're just running two guards out there, two, like, big, you know, big heady guards, or Caden and Blackwell, like, whoever.
Could that be like, could that be the Florida game or the Illinois game? Like, if we go against a massive front court, for example.
Maybe, yeah. Yeah. Or what if John just wants to stand them up, slow this team down, and zone them up? And I'm going to put 3 7-footers out there. And, come get it, right? Like, come get it. We can rebound out of the zone if I have these three guys in here too, right? Like, that gives you a different zone look. Where you can, like, really stay in the lanes there with that kind of length, dude. Not saying we're going to do that, but I think one thing that we've seen in the NBA, you know, we're coming up on, there hasn't been a dynasty really since, like, those Cavs Warriors a decade ago, basically, is that versatility and the flexibility in how you can play with your roster. And I think John has really, really, over the last three seasons, done just a hell of a job on, like, finding holes in the roster, finding talent out there in the margins, being able to get them on campus, to get collective buy-in, to get retention where he wants it, where he needs it. And I just think you're going to have that type of versatility, that type of flexibility, where maybe you just go huge and zone a game. Maybe you're flying up and down the court on another night. I mean, you just got to stay healthy. That's going to be the piece. Fellas, before we do get out of here, one thing that we were talking about offline, I think it's worth just kind of just putting it out here. You mentioned competition. We've mentioned the highlights here. It got us thinking a little bit. So we've seen in my, you know, since we've been covering this, like, two really good examples of kind of where it goes a little bit either way. If you remember Shimmy Ogilvie back in the day, so he had similar type highlights where he was just a tank, man, just beating up on a lot of little kids, it looked like, back in the day. Gets to Duke, and that kind of was like, oh, okay, the competition wasn't quite there. Now, Shimmy obviously transferred, went to SMU, became pro, played for the Celtics for a while. Like, it worked out. It worked out. But then we also saw it with Zion, where there was the same, like, all those, like, famous clips of, like, the, you know, 5'8 white guy that looks like me or something out there just trying to, like, get up on Zion. And it's like, was this going to translate? And then all of a sudden you realize that he's classically trained at the rim. The touch is incredible. He's got, like, a 70%, like, effective field goal percentage or whatever it is. It clearly did. And so it didn't matter. Like, he was able to transcend that. If there's a spectrum between Frosh Shimmy and Frosh Zion, where do you think JBB falls in that, like, continuum?
Well, I mean, as we all know, it'd be hard to recreate Zion, right? Like,
not saying that would be the expectation.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah. I mean, look, you know, I had my doubts because I thought the same thing. You know, when Zion gets to the ACC, he's not going to just be able to dunk on everybody. Well, you know, prove me wrong there for the most part. Not only that, but he could do so, you know, we saw that he could do so much else than what those highlights even showed us. You know, JBB, the thing that I like is that kind of that it's not a highlight of him just dunking. We've seen highlights of him doing multifaceted things. So while he might not be, like, great at one, it seems that he's good at a lot of different things. So I do think that there's, you know, a need for people to slow down on the overhype of it. But I think he's going to be a really good player. And the best thing is we're going to have him for 2 years regardless, right? Like, you know, whether or not he becomes a monster right out of the gate, I think year two, we are going to have a monster on our hands. Mm.
Yeah, and I guess where it's not comparable to Zion or Shimmy is, like, yes, he might be overwhelming his opponent physically, but it's not like it's popping with his extreme athleticism. You know, he's not doing 360 windmills. A lot of his stuff is skill-based that should translate, right? There's no reason why you can't come off movement and hit a shot regardless of who you're playing against. I mean, the safe bet to me would be, like, it'll end up being somewhere in the middle. But I will say that I am getting a little bit of Zion vibes in the sense that if you remember coming into that year, he committed late and he was almost like an afterthought or a throw in, right? Mm-hmm. And we all had these very high expectations for RJ and Cam. And then it was like, oh, Zion turned out to be very, very important. Or the same thing happened in 2014 going into the 2015 season with Justice Winslow as well. So it's like, sometimes that guy that you get late that you don't think is going to be this high impact guy ends up being critical. And that's the kind of vibe I'm getting with JBB a little bit. But, you know, who knows? I mean, I just think it's safe to say that he's not going to be playing 10 minutes a game. It might be closer to 25 or something.
Yeah, another guy that's in that mold, Marvin Bagley.
Yep.
You know, there's a lot of similarity, not in a weird way, but there is a lot of like, okay, what's the defense going to look like? What's the kind of, how does it translate to this level?
And then you already had a guy like at a similar position on the roster too.
Yeah,
you know, with Carter.
Yeah. So a lot of similarities there a little bit too. So good problems to have. Excited to see what it looks like, especially once he gets on campus, we start getting some scrimmage or practice footage. That'll be pretty good stuff.
You know, I've been rethinking how I style the smallest spaces in my house this summer. Instead of stressing over what won't fit, I've been looking at tons of versatile styles from Bob's Discount Furniture that actually multitask. Whether you're working from home or hosting guests, take that Betty dining set, for example. When it's just me, it's a compact, space-saving setup with a super comfy Bob-apedic seats. But it extends in a snap when company arrives. It comes in 4 fun colors, boasts over 1,500 five-star reviews, and at just $5.99 for a 7-piece set, you'll actually have a budget left for the dinner party. And if you love that retro chic vibe, they also have the Betty Bedroom Set featuring gorgeous felt-lined storage drawers and another 1,500 five-star reviews. Or if you just want to lounge, check out the Phantom Power Reclining Sofa. It's packed with cup holders, charging ports, and Bob-apedic cushions without taking over your whole living room. For quality furniture and everyday low prices, shop Bob's. It's where America shops for furniture.
Looking for a simpler way to explore medical weight loss options? Orderly Meds connects you online with licensed healthcare providers so you can learn about GLP-1 treatment options from home. It's convenient, straightforward, and designed to fit your lifestyle. Get started today at orderlymeds.com/podcasts. That's orderlymeds.com/podcasts. Again, orderlymeds.com/podcasts. Compounded medications are not FDA approved. Results may vary. Consult a licensed healthcare provider to determine if treatment is appropriate for you. Restrictions apply.
This is the sound of captivity. This is the sound of rescue. And this is the sound of freedom. Give Armenia's captive bears a second chance by supporting International Animal Rescue. Call 508-826-1083 or search The Great Bear Rescue to learn more.
All right, fellas, let's transition a little bit here. Let's talk briefly about some summer league. So far we've seen Cam Boozer, we've seen Malik Brown. Both guys had a pretty awesome debut, really, for it to be summer league. I mean, Cam had 15, 4 rebounds, 4 assists. Malik came out with 10 points, 3 rebounds, still on a block. Showed off the range a little bit, though. You got the 3, you got some under the basket work, the passing was there. Fellas, we can kind of jump in and take this where you want, but how impressed have you been so far with what we've seen in the summer league?
Yeah, I mean, I watched the Cam game more closely than the Malik one. And for me, it was like, I think what's going to open some people's eyes who didn't watch him closely last year and have all these kind of, you know, assumptions about what he plays like or kind of false conceptions about what he plays like, I think a lot of people's eyes are going to be opened by the passing. That was the thing that jumped out the most to me there. You know, he scores an efficient 15 points and like he only played 23 minutes because Memphis was just destroying Oklahoma City, which it was nice to see Cam get the best of Mara again, by the way. But anyway, some of the skip passes he made, some of the drop-off passes. I mean, I think he ends up with 4 assists, but he could have ended up with more. And just watching that, I'm like, I see no reason why at his peak, he might not average like 8 or 9 assists, you know, as a big man.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, to me, man, it's like, it's more, we've seen this for out of like 3 different levels from Cam. We saw it at high school. Was it real? You saw it at Duke. Was it real? We're seeing it again already. This is a little bit different, but nothing like takes away. Like, I think he's the best player in this draft purely because I think he's the best connective superstar in the draft. And what I mean by that is like, everyone's asking him, like they're asking the wrong question, right? So when everyone interviews Cam Boozer, they interview him and say, like, how are you a winner? Like, how do you continue to win at this level? They're asking it in an individual question. That's the wrong question to ask. He wins at this level because he makes everyone around him that much damn better.
Yep.
That's how you win. That's how you're a winner at three different levels, because every team that you're on, you're just connectively raising the floor. Like the collective floor when he steps on the roster just increases, man. It's like if you're playing a video game, he put him in your party, everyone gets plus five. Like he just elevates you at that level. And I think you're going to continue to see it in the NBA. And I love what Memphis is doing, is they're really trying to make him that superstar, to make him like, this is the foundation that we're going to build this thing around. And I think it's a good play, man. I think it's a good play. I think it's going to work out. And he might never pop. Like he's probably not going to win a scoring title like Peterson or Nabonsa, but I think he's the only one of the three that can hold and maintain like a top 15-ish NBA level offense efficiently, like to where just everything is kind of operating at that level.
We saw Peterson come out and score 28 points in like 22 minutes or something, pretty efficiently too, but he has two assists to eight turnovers, right?
Yeah.
So that's the difference. I mean, there's a difference between a scorer and an offensive engine. And I think Cam is the latter.
Yeah. I mean, I would agree with that too. He just raises the collective form and so much, dude. For Malik, I mean, it was cool to see him. Like, if they can unlock the offensive piece, which we never really were able to do at Duke, didn't really see it. Obviously, you have, you know, way fewer possessions, way fewer time, pace, all of this stuff. I get that as well. Possessions, you know, carry a little bit more weight, a lot more weight at the college level. So you didn't quite see it here. Fellas, if we get like Syracuse offensive Malik and then defensively at Duke, what we've seen, the connected pieces at Duke that we've seen, I mean, he can make this roster. Like he could make this roster and be one of those Swiss Army playable. Now, he might be 12th, 13th down there on the, but yep. I think he could stick, man. Is that too premature for y'all? I mean, obviously he could still go to the G League at times. Like I expect that, but I think he could be there, man. I think we could look up at, you know, February or March and we're watching the Spurs and Charlotte and Malik's on the floor. That doesn't seem out of the picture to me. Where are y'all at with Malik?
I definitely could see that. I mean, Malik at Duke, he was almost unselfish to a point. Like, you know, he's got a lot of great scorers around him here. So a lot of times he just deferred, looked to get it to somebody else. I mean, we saw his freshman, sophomore years at Syracuse when, you know, he was dependent on to score the ball. I mean, he put up a big number in Cameron. I think now that he's, you know, in the NBA and it's a business and it's, you know, he's going to make the right play, but he also knows it's a business. You got to look to be, you know, to be a reason to be out on the floor. I kind of see it kind of like Lance Thomas. I mean, Lance Thomas was a glue guy for us, right? And then we talked about went to the Knicks and all of a sudden developed a corner 3-point jump shot and, you know, played a couple years for those guys.
Best on that team, yeah.
I could see Malik having something similar and being maybe even a little bit better than that just because he can, his defensive awareness and then his rebounding and passing and everything else that he can do.
Yeah, I never really doubted that his defense would translate. When you're that mobile and have those kind of instincts and hands, like I don't see any reason why he wouldn't be able to guard NBA players. The part that I was just, you know, a little bit more hesitant about was you really have to be some sort of offensive threat in the NBA to be on the floor. You know, there are a few exceptions to that, but even those guys can do something with the ball. So to see him make a couple threes in his debut was pretty promising, you know, because he's going to be left wide open like that. If he's on the floor with Victor Wembanyama and Dylan Harper and Steph Castle, he's going to be the one not guarded. So you just have to make the open three when it comes to you.
Yeah. I mean, you got to be willing to take him. I think he took four in the debut. So it's like, that's what you got to see. And one was like top of the key, there too. Like it wasn't just a corner one. So you're starting to see some of that from Malik, man. I do hope it sticks. I think he can be one of those like just great connective pieces when if you put him on the floor with some of those guys. But yeah, you're gonna have to continue to take and make shots. We're not gonna talk too much about Isaiah because Slim hasn't played yet, so it'll be a little bit until we see that. Expecting to see him out there on the summer league roster though, so hopefully we'll have some footage in the next week or two to chop up on that.
Yeah. I don't think they played their first game yet, and besides, he hasn't officially been traded to the Wolves yet. Like, it was announced on draft night, but the trade doesn't go through till tomorrow, so he wouldn't have been able to play even if they had played. So.
Sure.
Okay. I see no reason why he wouldn't be out there. He's exactly the kind of guy you want on the summer.
He's going to be out there, I would imagine. In fact, you might not see Cam too much more. I don't know how much more they're going to need to risk that being out there.
Well, this will have already happened, and listeners will know the answer to this, but tonight, right now, I think apparently, Cam and Peterson should be going head to head because it's supposed to be 9-9. So the question is whether they're both going to play, you know, with Peterson, you never know, but maybe he'll play like 12 minutes and take himself out.
Cam, it's the first 3 threes. It's like, hey, I gotta sit down. All right, fellas, if you don't have anything else to say about summer league stuff, not a ton, just wanted to at least mention our guys off the top here. We'll jump into some brief recruiting news. Not going to dig too much in the weeds here, but wanted to hit on a few things. We're going to get John Watson or someone to come on here eventually, trying to rank that up in the summer to dive in with a little bit more of a knowledge base that's actually seen these guys, scouted these guys, followed these guys for a couple of years here. But let's start with the Knipple man. You know, you get Cager. We talked about him, I think, what was that fellow? It was a couple months back. First commit now in the 2027 class. Did not take too long. We've seen it yet again. You saw it with Khan too, but Cager has now taken a pretty massive jump. I think he went from 52 to 14 on Rivals, 85 to 36 on ESPN. You expect something similar to happen on 247. Fellas, like, again here, it's a little unfair compared to what we got with Khan and then what you just saw Khan do in the NBA as a rookie, to put that on Cager, but he comes in about 4 inches taller, like four inches taller. I mean, guy is looking like Napoleon Bird out there, just flame throwing. I love having the Knipples back in Cameron too. So everything seems to be just like this unanimous, like, cool story. Awesome. Love it. But for y'all, how good do you think this kid is? I mean, like, hard not to compare him to Khan, but you got to compare him to Khan here a little bit. So, like, where are you at impact level year one from a Cager? No, and we still have another high school season to really see him play, right?
Yeah, I don't know if he's going to get his opportunity to kind of pop like Khan did. You know, Khan did come joining a pretty loaded team and, you know, stood out, you know, amongst some pretty good players.
And made himself compliment the best player on the team very, very early, which is a key piece for why Khan was able to Robin his way through. I mean, maybe you should say he should have Batmaned it, but not to cut you off, but go ahead.
Yeah. I mean, I'm thinking, you know, not that we would have this kid for 4 years, but, you know, I just see, I guess, Ryan Kelly for some reason, just a big, tall, you know, jump shooting guy. Maybe, Ryan had a great basketball IQ, but obviously the whole Knipple family, you know, have been doing this for a long time. The shooting chops are there. So, you know, I'm looking forward to this kid being on campus and obviously the rest of the family being around more as well.
Yeah. And I mean, to your point, Shu, like in terms of opportunity, you got to keep in mind that Boumche will still be there and Cager really should be playing the four, and they're both their best skill is shooting. So it's kind of like, I mean, what's his opportunity going to be there? Is it just going to be backing up JBB? Because if that's the case, JBB is going to be playing all the minutes he can get as a sophomore. So that might kind of put a lid on his minutes. But I mean, the shooting is what it is, right? It's like he's 6'10 and he shot like 51% from three in EYBL. And, you know, that's a kind of incredibly valuable combination of, you know, attributes, right? To be able to shoot that well at 6'10 is not something that you find that easily. So there's no reason you can't have two guys like that on the team and and then both get minutes.
And I do think for him, it is like, I need to get as close to being a small forward as possible, probably, right? Because the shooting, the way he can shoot is, and not that you have to be, I'm not too much on the position, but I think it's, can I defend wings is the better question, right? Like, can you defend wings? And if you can, that then allows you to, you could do Cager, JBB, Sharnowski, or whoever you want to throw down there. Like, you could run those lineups out there too.
We've offered a center, I'm blanking on his name right now, in 2027 as well, and he's like a top 10 guy. So,
and he looks freaking incredible. Like, he looks like it's the next Mel Lodge, Lively type of just big bruising type dude. Or at least, not that those guys are big bruisers, but they to the rim they were.
Yeah. Shot blocking, rim protecting kind of guy.
Whether
or not they're bulky.
Right. And to me, that is the Cager, either like once he fills into the body, right? Are you going to hit the weight room? Or are you going to kind of like manage in this type of frame, like what that's going to look like as he, you know, do you get to singular level build? Can you get to that and still be able to play 3-4? Do you go the Jack White route and try to just be this like 6'10, you know, buff junior 5 type spacer guy? I'll be interested to see. I've seen a lot of Dunleavy comparisons. I haven't followed Cager enough to know. Now for Mike was legitimately a guard.
He was a guard,
in like a summer. Like, that's different if you've played like, you know, his dad. Obviously, we know who Mike Dunleavy is, Mike Dunleavy Jr. If you've played organized high level basketball since the time you were 6 years old, like, and as a guard, like, he had legitimate guard skills. Like, he was a guard. Like, Paolo was a guard that grew into a forward. I don't know if Cager's ever been a guard. I'm not saying he hasn't been. I just haven't followed him at that level. But I caution, or at least I kind of maybe buck some of the Dunleavy stuff, just because like Dunleavy was a wizard on the ball, dude, and then just grew to 6'10 and could still shoot the piss out of the ball. So it was like, okay, cool, that works. But like, he had like legitimate ball skills too, like Mike did.
Well, not to bring yet another white shooter into this, but I saw some scout compare him to, like, this is he could be the idealized version of what Matt Hurt was supposed to be. Now, Matt Hurt was good, right? Like, he had a great sophomore season. He shot it didn't really translate to the NBA, but, you know, it sucks that it was in 2021, bad season overall, you know, him and
Jalen
kind of overlapped, positionally, and then Jalen left the team, and it was like, it was a whole mess, right? But Hurt, I think he had like a 64% true shooting that season and was like the leading scorer. So it's not like he was bad at all, but I kind of liked that comp too. You know, just this, I see a lot of Hurt in his game.
Yeah. Now, all those, I mean, there's element, and it is the funny kind of white kid to white kid comps, but there's a lot of similarities in some of those approaches. Just the Dunleavy one, I'm always just kind of like, man, Dunleavy was just different.
He could put the ball on the floor so well too, you know,
close outs. Yeah.
I had Mike, some ferocious dunks too.
Yeah. Yeah. Mike was nasty, man. One of my
would spin players. Around you. I mean,
and always just the fake swing.
Fake swing back. In the Arizona.
Chef's kiss on that one, man. Shouts to Mike. But all right, we can kind of move on a little bit. Wanted to shout out to Cager here. I haven't tracked some of these other big offers. I know we sent like 3 out on the same day, basically, to like the top 27, 28 kids here. The one that I'd like to talk about a little bit in the context of it would be Colton Hiller, but there's also AJ Williams. Beckham Black's another kid Duke is kind of going after pretty hard. You mentioned the center. I need to find his actual name here.
So there's a center in both classes. So there's, I don't know if you guys were talking about Louis Uvuo. He's in, we just offered him. He's in 2027, but you might be talking about 2028 kid. Jan Kamagate.
I think that's who I'm talking about. Yeah.
He's the nasty one. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And Uvuo's, I mean, he's, you know, he looks to be a pretty elite rim protector too. But yeah.
I mean, they're both top 10 guys. So it's like, they're going to be good.
Yeah. There's like a ton of like centers in like 28 or 21 of them. But like half of the top 50 was all centers, which is,
I think these next two classes are going to be way better than this last class.
Yeah.
Just looking at the top of those classes. And how many offers we sent out too.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think one thing we should talk about just in the context of it, and again, John Watson already said he would come on and join us. I'm going to reach out to a few other folks to dig into more of the recruiting stuff. But something that we started to see is we saw it with Duke and JBB this year. I also saw the kid going to UCLA from also from FC Barcelona, signed a 2-year deal. We're seeing some of the European guys coming over here, the international guys coming over here. Colton Hiller's a guy that also could potentially, not that he's international, but has a chance to reclass, but would still need to have 2 years in college. Fellas, is this becoming a trend here? It seems that people are starting to get in on this. I'm personally a huge fan because I think it could kind of save the sport a little bit. It gives you almost contracts. You can start to negotiate kind of different avenues here, not as much of roster volatility. Fellas, where are you at on this 2-year thing? It seems that it's not just going to be a one-off with JBB.
No, I mean, I think it's where the money's at, right? So, I mean, you know, if you're a top high school kid and, you know, have that opportunity to come in and, you know, think that you could really make an impact on the team, if you're one of these elite guys, why not come in and get a little bit of money, 2 years, sign a 2-year deal? You know, I think we've seen in the past, was it Brandon Jennings? Who was it that didn't go to college? They went overseas to play, right?
Yeah, was it Brandon Jennings?
Yeah. So, you know, he went over there. This is a business decision. I'm going to go make some money before I can go get drafted. And that's what he did. You know, we weren't paying college players at the time. And I think it's just going to be good for the sport, for college, probably good for the NBA too, because if you looked at the draft, how the draft had turned out being, you know, there's a lot of international prospects and you don't really know how these guys are going to translate to American basketball. Well, if you're pulling them over and putting them in our, you know, farming league, minor league, you know, NBA scouts get to see, okay, these guys played against who they would be playing against next year in the NBA anyways. And we're, you know, you don't, you wouldn't, might not have a Milicic kind of on your hands where, you know,
this guy's
a number two pick and you can serve you and you're like, you know, can he even play?
Yeah, no, that's good. Yeah. Or even like the Ricky Rubio, right, where you're having to draft a guy and stash him and he doesn't come over for 3 more years or something.
Sure.
Whatever that was. Yeah.
So I think it'll work out. It's a win-win for everybody, right? Like you'll still get these international prospects, but now they can come over here, make a ton of money. And then, you know, the NBA gets a little bit out of it because you get a little bit better recruiting or analysts get to see them a little bit more in their natural state where they would be playing in.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, well, look, I mean, they get paid to play for FC Barcelona or whatever, but there's no way
that's that what can this compete
with $6 million or whatever. You know, it's just knowing what international salaries are, you know, for even the older players. So, yeah, I mean, and the exposure level, like you mentioned, you know, when we had Ben Pfeiffer on, he talked about how much easier it's made scouting now that, you know, that these players are coming over to college that. For him, it's just there's so much more footage, right? You can watch every one of their games where is digging around the internet trying to find FC Barcelona games for like not even the like the older team, right? Like JBB didn't play for the older team. He played for like the under 19 FC Barcelona team. So imagine trying to find footage of that. It's going to be pretty limited. So I think it's a good thing all around. You know, Hiller's obviously a different situation. I don't know how many players we're going to see that do this because there's a limited number of guys that are going to qualify because you have to be too young for the draft, but good enough where you think you can compete in college, right? So that's a very narrow window of players. And Hiller's like falls perfectly into that where he misses the age cutoff by like 11 days or something. So
That's it. And I'm wondering if we'll start to see too, like, you know, a lot of guys, the last 20 years or so were really older than the class that they were in. Like a lot of guys had gotten like back early to like fit in, to get themselves in this position. Now I'm wondering if it maybe flips a little bit and they start pushing like, now can you actually get up here, get to the money, get the development and just go ahead and kind of like become a, I mean, it's college basketball, but you're basically becoming a pro now in college basketball, right? You're not, this isn't amateur sports anymore. Like this is pretty big time stuff. And so it's pretty big money for sure. So I'm wondering if that will even flip or change too. Cause a lot of guys that used to reclass were really just reclassing back to their original class, right? Like that's what you saw all the time. But maybe you'll see more. I mean, you know, you get an Andre Dawkins, you get a Hiller or someone like that that come in. I think you gotta be selective. Hiller is a guy that I think already has enough buzz that he's kind of garnered to where it would work.
Yep.
But you have to be careful of, if you're in the high school ranks already, international guys, I think, have less risk. But if you're like a big Cooper Flag, Colton Hill, like if you're in that sort of like Devonta type, you might could actually do better by just going back a senior year and just putting up 28-30, winning another state title, and then coming in with the roster set for you to be the guy. Versus like if you come in here and just, you know, Jaden Quintance or something like that, right? You just kind of get unknown for a year. And then it's like, oh yeah, this kid that was supposed to be good 2 years ago, now he's coming in as a sophomore. So it could kind of burn you a little bit. But Colton seems like a kid that it would work for. I mean, it just seems like he has the pedigree, but.
I guess the counter argument is like, you do have year two to redeem yourself, right? Like if you struggle, and then if you come into Duke and at like 17 and you don't play well that first year, if you play well as a sophomore, nobody's going to care that you didn't play well that first year, right? Because you're still going to be young by NBA standards and you're going to be at Duke on the biggest stage getting that exposure.
Yeah. I mean, so yeah. And you're getting paid. So it's like, if it works out for you, there's a little bit, you know, you can maybe check the ego a little bit differently.
Worst when case, you're like $4 million richer.
Right. Yeah. So, you know, we'll see. And I'm not even saying, you know, I mentioned Colton because he's eligible for it and it's something that's been tossed around. I haven't seen anything indicating that he's actually wanting to do that or that's like the plan, but it looks like it could be available.
AJ Williams has been mentioned to do that too, but he's at the age where he would only stay 1 year. So,
yeah.
Yeah, that's not as appealing, right? Yeah. That's not quite it, because then it's like, you know, whatever.
And then you're just like, you might be elite, but you're young for your... Yeah.
Whereas Colton doing it or something, or even AJ, I mean, again, then you're looking at maybe pairing one of those guys with a sophomore JBB, and it's like, ooh, that becomes kind of like the.
And if you're bringing in like a Beckham Black as the like true point guard too, I mean, I think next year's class could be filthy. Potentially, it could be Shire's best one. It has, and
I like that he's doing that, like. The class that we brought in this year and the needs that we need from them match the quality of the class, right? Versus if you want to lean in heavily on freshmen, if it's a 2018 level class and you've got RJ Cam Zion, then you can lean on freshmen, right? Like then you can lean on those dudes. Cam didn't pan out, but the other two are high level pros. One's elite when he's healthy. The other one's had a renaissance in Toronto. And so it's like, okay, those guys can carry you in college.
And that's why you get three of them, right? Because there's a chance that one doesn't pan out.
That you don't get what you need from one of them. So yeah, we'll see, man. AJ and Colton are big time dudes. And so even if they stayed and they didn't play with some of these other guys, if you got a class with both of those guys headlining it in 28, that's pretty big. But I would be pretty surprised at this point, based on the smoke and mirror and what we just heard, if both of those guys remain. In 2020, it does sound like it could be kind of like that flag boozer thing where one bumps up, one sticks. Yep. You know, we'll see. We'll continue to track that. But anything else y'all want to kind of chop up on recruiting wise? If not, we'll just leave it to the experts to come in and really talk more about the game, the fit, the actual heat index of some of these offers. You know, especially when we get John Watson on, he'll talk a little bit more about the portal stuff. But I want to talk to him too more about Duke's thought process into this class. Is this a wide net or is it no, we want all of these guys on the same team, same roster? Like what's the thought process? So we'll get those guys to come in and chop it up on that. But fellas, any final parting shots for you all? It looks like the US swan song is coming to an end here. It's 3-1. Yeah.
Oh, tough. All right. Well,
in terms of final thoughts, I would say let's get Kenston Knipple in here too and just keep this thing going.
You know? Yes, Cash, Kinston. There's another one.
Kidman. Okay. Yeah, that's the last one, right? Cash, okay. Kinston, Kidman, Cager, and Khan.
All right. I want them all. I don't care. I don't even care.
Yeah, why not just sign them up?
Yeah. Yeah. Pokemon this thing. Catch them all. You know, get them all in here.
Just, you know, if one of them is like, you know, ranked 200, just have them come on and be the Jordan Goldwire of the team, you know?
Yeah.
Be the guy that comes in and just really, really like boost our like last 90 seconds of
play. Hubbard, you know?
Yeah, coming in with an 8-8 run.
Coming in with the flamethrower.
Yeah, I love it. But all right, fellas, I guess we'll go ahead and get out of here for this one. Again, y'all, appreciate you for checking us out. We're going to try to continue to stay on a somewhat consistent schedule over the summer. I think so far we've been on a pretty good kind of semi-weekly schedule. So that's the plan. Trying to get some guests lined up. I know I keep saying that, but you know, we've got the holiday here, July 4th that just happened. Hoping to get into the off season here a little bit better. Get some folks on here to come chat.
We're good to go with Jeff Goodman. I think we could probably
Up, I think, next week or so. Then we'll get John Watson on here at some point. I've reached out to a few others. I'm sure we'll get Brian Geisinger on to come back at some point as well to kind of get into more
of a lot of Charlotte Hornets stuff to talk about.
A lot of Hornets stuff to dig into, especially after some post trades and moves and everything else. So we'll spend about 6 hours talking about the mid-level exception with Brian, and we'll chop that up into four episodes, and that'll be good for the summer. But no, we appreciate y'all. In the meantime, please continue to rate, review, subscribe. If you got a topic, if you got something kind of fun off the cuff, or a specific type of guest, shoot us an email, thedevilsinpod@gmail.com. We might be able to get them. We had a great one last year where someone wanted us to interview a referee, and we ended up linking up with Jamie Lucky. So worked out. Send us what you got. We'll take a look at that. We appreciate all the correspondence there. You can find us on X/Twitter @DevilsDenPod247, and keep the pitch strong in the provider.